Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is artist Barbara McPhail. McPhail is a graduate of both East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina, and Binghamton University. Her artwork encompasses many mediums, including painting, printmaking, hand-built ceramics, and collage. She has worked as an art instructor in both middle and high schools and was a visiting artist at Cuca College this year. Her work has been shown and displayed in many galleries and art spaces, including a solo exhibit recently at the Leitner Gallery at Cuca College. And she's also had group exhibits and invitationals all over the region and the country. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, do you recall when you first started creating art, and what was it that triggered it? Do you know?
Actually, I have a very early memory when I was in elementary school in North Carolina. I remember there used to be a thing called the weekly reader, and you know they handed out in the classrooms, and there was an image in there of a bulldozer type of tractor, and we were given the weekly reader to look at, and we had paper, we were given paper, and I started drawing this tractor, and I guess I did a very good job, and my teacher came around, and she studied it and hovered over me and said, "Did you draw that or did you trace it?" And I said, "I drew it." And then we went out to recess and I saw her out on the playground with my drawing, showing it to other teachers. And that's just a standing memory, you know, like a positive thing that happened. And I was an artist, you know, at that moment to her, you know. For some reason, I have always remembered that very small little incident. And all through elementary school, middle school, high school, my art talent was valued. My family valued it. My parents valued it. My sister valued it.
Oh, wow. You were lucky.
I won a Gold Key Award in high school, which is Scholastic Art Award, you know. So, you know, I just knew I was an artist.
Uh-huh.
I think I was born an artist.
Yeah, you must have been. That's so great that it was nurtured so early on. Did you remember from that drawing what you started segueing into? What kind of medium?
Well, actually, I did a lot of pastel and oil painting in middle school and high school, and my parents had given me the tools to do that. They gave me paints and little canvases and paper pads. You know, high school was a time, and middle school was a time when you were able to explore more with visual arts in terms of in the classroom. It's different now. You know, they didn't always have it, so you went to art class. You know, it was more in the classroom when I was younger. So I developed. But when I was in high school and I won the Gold Key Award and I was celebrated in the community as an artist, and you know, someone actually came and wanted to buy something I had made. And
wow!
When I was, you know, very young, so I just knew that I needed to go for art to college. And East Carolina was the perfect situation for me. The school was fantastic, had a fantastic education there.
Uh-huh. Well, you seem to be into textures, and you use many ordinary objects in a lot of your work. Was that part of your philosophy, or did you just start picking that up?
In college, I became more eclectic. I'm fascinated by so many different areas and mediums in art that I had a hard time settling in the beginning, but I eventually went into printmaking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was due to seeing these fantastic prints that were coming out of the printmaking department in East Carolina that were so striking, and there was nothing like them. I mean, I knew how to paint, but I hadn't had printmaking, and the technique just grabbed me. I have to learn that, you know. And that's kind of the way it's stayed. I mean, I have to keep learning. I'm very focused on learning and then sharing what I've learned. And that's one of the reasons why, if you go on my website, you'll see I've done ceramics, I've done collage, you know, watercolor, pen and ink, everything, because I can't stop learning how to do everything. I need to always be learning.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds like a creative person, period. Your brain just keeps moving. But you seem to have perfected printmaking.
I learned the monoprint technique in New York City at Bob Blackburn's printmaking workshop, which is a very well-known collaborative place. And Bob Blackburn he's no longer living, but he had this wonderful workshop that people from all over the world came to. And I went from college to New York City. I had a sister, an older sister, living in New York City at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved there and I got my apartment and went right away to Bob Blackburn's printmaking workshop, and I saw the monoprint technique being done there, the one that I use now, and I was fascinated by it. I've always been a shape person, you know, interested in shapes, and it's about taking shape, making shapes out of. I use tag board, fabric,
string, wallpaper,
you know, all types, but mostly it's a shape-oriented process.
Uh-huh.
And I remember actually once in college when I was doing oil painting, one of the students said to me, Your paintings always have so many shapes in them. They're so shape-oriented. And I remember thinking, what does that mean, shape-oriented? But then when I saw the monoprint technique, it clicked, and I started to realize that I am shape-oriented. Uh-huh. And the technique just grabbed me, and I started to work in an experiment. And I use so many different techniques within it now.
Uh-huh. Well, Nick, tell us simply, how do you do
okay.
this technique?
Well, I call it the printed collage. And I do, love collage. I have a piece of plexiglass, and I make shapes out of all the different ingredients, like we discussed, the tag board or fabric or, string, whatever. And I sometimes even make wire shapes. And I ink up the plexiglass, and then I ink the shapes separately, Then I place the inked shapes on the inked plexiglass.
Uh-huh.
And I wet a piece of printmaking paper, and printmaking paper has to be dampened, and then you soak it, and then you blot it so it's not so, wet.
Dripping wet.
Mm-hmm. I put the plexiglass with the inked shapes on the etching press, put the paper on it, and printed it all in one shot. Then when I lift up the paper, there's residue left on the shapes and also on the plexiglass, so I can lift up the shapes. Sometimes I can turn them over. There's also what didn't transfer is underneath the shapes. The ink is still there.
Uh-huh.
You can use that and re-ink some shapes and put them in different places, maybe re-ink part of the plexiglass or not, and make a second print, and that's called the ghost image.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I love that word,
ghost
image.
It has a lot more modulation, and it's has more ambiguity to it, and it's atmosphere. And then because I've been doing this long enough, I can often even get a third print by re-inking again some places or some shapes. And, it has a lot to do with how thick I make the ink and print with it, that kind of thing also.
Uh-huh.
And so
it's beautiful stuff. When you look at it on the computer, I haven't seen it live, some mm-hmm. of your stuff. It looks like a watercolor kind of
It's that's my style
technique.
Though. That's more mm-hmm. that's more my style because of the colors I choose and whether I make them more transparent or the ink more transparent or opaque. I have a sort of softness to my style, that watercolor look to it.
Mm-hmm.
Some monoprints are much
denser
mm-hmm. and they make layers and layers and layers of printing on the paper, but I don't do that so much. I do sometimes use two pieces of plexiglass where I ink them both up and print one thing on top of the other, but I rarely ever go beyond the two pieces of plexiglass printed on top of the paper.
Uh-huh.
But some people make layers and layers and layers, like very dense and heavy looking. And
yeah, yours are very, they almost look like stained glass, in fact.
They're very unique.
You are very good at composition, too. Do you plan these things out really,
it's
really deep?
So I do
detail?
Plan it out, but I'm highly intuitive with composition. I do. I plan out my images, actually, for a long time sometimes before printing. And sometimes I make a tiny little test image. Like I'll make, if the image is of, an icicle, say, dripping, I might make a small little icicle dripping and put it on a smaller piece of plexiglass to see what it's looking like, So sometimes I'll test the image first with a smaller idea of it
mm-hmm.
in printmaking, the monoprint technique. And especially if I'm doing a technique that I've never done before, like multiple plates or something, sometimes I test it out on a smaller way so I know what I'm doing and how the ink really will sit, on top of each other.
Mm-hmm. Like so many artists, you seem to be so tuned into nature. Are you transferring just thoughts of nature, or are you out walking and remembering, or are you taking photos?
I take some photographs. Mm-hmm. I also have a very good memory of things, in my life. Like, and I think it has a lot to do with not being so young anymore. I've just drawn a lot of things uh-huh. in my life, and my drawing memory is still good. I know how to draw many, many things now because I've been drawing for so many years
uh-huh.
and making art for so many years that I have all that memory in my mind. But I'm very, very into preserving the earth, and nature is a very big factor in my work.
Uh-huh. A lot of people probably wouldn't realize that drawing would be important in being a printmaker. Talk to us about the importance of being able to draw.
Drawing is important in every field of art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even sculptors, they drew pages and pages and pages of shapes and mm-hmm. the way shapes work with each other and, made them into 3D aspects before they go to sculpting. Drawing is like writing a sentence. If you want to write a paragraph, you have to start with a sentence.
Uh-huh.
And in drawing is the beginning of all art. And even if it's doodling, You know, it doesn't have to be so perfect. I know once someone asked me a question about at Cougar College, one of the students said, tell me, do you draw everything out? And I said, well, I have a sketchbook and I make incredible amount of drawings and notes in there, but you wouldn't be able, they don't look like anything to you. I mean, you wouldn't understand them. They would, they're very rough and they'd be meaningless to you, but I understand the thought process and I understand the shape, you know, referral. I can refer to it for the shape. And so, yes, drawing is very important.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I know it is, but, you know, one would not necessarily connect that with printmaking. Now, you say that you speak through shapes. So is that what you're talking about?
I have such an intuitive way I work when I work with shapes. It's hard to explain, and this goes back to the design question, which you had asked me. It's very hard to explain how design works with me. I start creating an idea, like I'm going to make a print that talks about the gas emissions in the hydrofracking process, for instance. And so I start looking at, well, what will represent that? And I start putting together just one aspect after another of things that need to be in the picture. And then I start playing with the shapes. It's really very playful. Mm. I make different shapes and I start playing with them on the plexiglass. I take a clean piece of plexiglass, you know, no ink, just play with the shapes. I start to make the image, and I have to decide what's bigger, what's smaller. You know, that kind of contrast of size is very important, and proportion is very important. And I think that's one of the things that makes you say that I have a good sense of design, is that I work really hard on the proportions of things in my images so that they're interesting that way. You know, there's something larger, something middle size, something smaller, and all the combinations of the textures and the colors.
Do you find that, like, big shapes or certain kinds of shapes correspond with words to you that you're trying to convey to people and have people say, oh, that's horrifying or that's beautiful? Or
you know, especially with the hydrofracking series, I have struggled with how to make the series. And it's very complex symbolically how to make the images speak about the idea without making them really horribly ugly or you know because the process can just devastate an area. And so, you know, I want to talk about the devastation, but I don't want to make ugly images. In terms of how the shapes speak about the process or about hydrofracking or saving the earth or anything, I think it just, however I work, it's just intuitive. I can't sometimes even explain. I go into my whole body, I mean, it's a whole, when I'm in the studio working, it just flows.
Yeah. So the work in some ways explains what you're thinking and wanting to say.
Yes.
So let's talk about this hydrofracking exhibit that you had recently. It was at Cuca College.
Right.
Tell us about it. How did it even start evolving?
Well, I've always had a political streak in me for years. I was ready to be very deeply involved in something that was very meaningful at the time that I began to read about the hydrofracking, which was coming up in the newspapers.
Oh,
when I first read about it, I said, I've got to talk about this in my work. That was the summer of 2010.
Mm.
And I started doing that. And then after that, I saw Gasland and some of the other, you know, videos that came out also. That some of them were just on YouTube about the different things that were going on. But it just empowered me more to talk, you know, more deeply about the issues. I made the commitment to work on it and make about a dozen images, a minimum of a dozen images on the process, and to try to get an exhibit. I mean, I made a goal that I needed to speak about it, but speaking about it wasn't enough. I needed to show it. I needed to exhibit it. I needed to bring it to the audience of the area. You know, I just started very small with the very first thing, which was that you can light your water on fire. And the first image was water to fire, in the dripping of the shape, it looks like sort of an icicle shape. There was a fire around it. You know, that was just the straight idea of the symbolic nature of that. And then I looked very carefully at the material I was reading and chose what to talk about.
If you're just joining us, my guest is visual artist Barbara McPhail. We're talking about an exhibit that she recently had at Cuca College, which she hopes to take around the country, about hydrofracking. But let's talk more about some of these images. There's still a lot of people who are arguing this issue, and some people don't think it's a devastating idea or that it'll ruin the environment. You obviously have decided that it will compromise and do something negative to the environment. So where did you call up the images from?
Well, what I did was I made a list of ideas that were being talked about, whether it's NPR or in the newspaper, for example, One was about the gas emissions that mm-hmm. come off of the holding tanks and then the diesel emissions. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, unnatural gas, morning mist, it has a figure hovering over what is a, some kind of containment tank, which I use like netting, like you use in a bride's netting, to make the air around it that is emission coming out, uh-huh. Hovering over the cattle in the field, hovering over the fresh grass out there, going towards the background mountains. And so, and then the Howard fracking tower is right front in the picture. You can't miss it. It's right there beside of the man hovering over the little tank. So I just chose issues that were coming up.
Uh-huh. And then we do have evidence. I mean, there have been
some
negative.
There's evidence. And it is actually, most of it is mm-hmm. factual. There are some images that are more like what if. For example, the future suburbs, which is the little islands with the little house on them, and there's this land that's been dug away around them. I mean, that's talking about, well, what about extracting, you know, oil and gas from our earth? Are we just going to dig everything away and there's nothing left but these little islands that you can go live on that are, you know, all separated out from all the digging away? Uh-huh. And, you know, that's more futuristic sort of, almost surrealism.
Yeah, but I can see that. I mean, we are heading into a science yeah. fiction version
right.
of what
right.
could happen.
And that was a scarier type image. You know, mm-hmm. it wasn't as pretty as some of the others, although I've had evoked a response. I had several people comment that was their favorite.
Uh-huh.
You know,
well, you're depicting the beautiful nature that we have all around us,
right.
and it's showing black smoke and what could happen to this
right.
beautiful landscape
right.
that we all live in.
Right.
What kind of responses have you gotten from other people?
The exhibit at Cuca College was very popular, and with the people who did see it, they were very effusive in their remarks, and many people commented that it needs to be seen in all around, especially in the Finger Lakes area or New York State at large, because we are in the middle right yeah. now of trying to yeah. stop it.
Oh, and also in Pennsylvania, there's all kinds of
that it needs to be seen. It needs to
yeah.
travel. It needs
yeah.
to be seen. And the comment was, because the voice in the images is so strong that the way the images produce the feeling, when you get the response you have when you're looking at it visually, it was so strong with people.
Mm-hmm.
Cuca College, I have to say, the gallery is right across from the water, the lake. And a lot of my images have, you know, beautiful scenes of water in them.
Oh, yeah.
And then you look out the window and you see the lake. It was such a perfect location for it.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm hoping your vision doesn't come to pass. I mean, that's the point of it, right? We don't want to see
right.
the landscape looking like
right.
some of these, although they are beautiful, some of your images. We do not want to see our landscape compromised this way. Let's talk about some of the other series work that you've done. I love your jazz series. How did that come about? Are you a lover of jazz music?
I am. I was living in New York City. It was from the beginning of my first few years in New York City. And it started actually with a friend of a friend who was camping out in my living room. And she had a job where she had to wear high heels to school, I mean, to work every day.
Uh-huh.
And I'd given her an empty bookshelf to put her clothing on. And she had loaded this bookshelf up with her sweaters and her high heels. And I just sat down and drew it one day. And I did a drawing of whatever was on the bookshelf. And I was listening to a lot of jazz, and I happened to also, in that time period, two different times find two pianos on the street that were just thrown out.
Wow.
And I took the keys from the pianos and all of them, everything that I could, because it was so sculptural.
Uh-huh.
I took them to my apartment, and I started playing with drawing those items. And I started just putting them together, and, you know, the high heels and sort of the...
Those are great.
And you see the color difference between them, too.
But they feel like they're moving.
Exactly, yes.
They're great.
Yes, they have rhythm.
It is. It's musical visuals.
Yes, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Yes. And the color of those were more brighter, more brilliant, you know, lighter colors when, like, the hydrofracking nature series is more blues and greens. And
yeah.
There's a whole different way of using color to speak, about the...
Oh, it's great stuff. Listen up, all you jazz musicians. There's some covers there.
Right.
Well, what about your Protector series? I love that one as well.
Well, when I was living in New York City at that time also, I was very interested in world cultures. And, you know, where else can you just see all of it but in New York City? And
yeah.
I've always been interested in world cultures. And I had also at the same time visited a friend in Seattle, Washington, and gone to see all the totems that were all over the place.
Oh,
and
yeah.
going up to Vancouver and just had all these experiences, you know, visual experiences. And I was sort of putting it all together. And when you live in New York City, you have to protect yourself. Like the way you walk on the street, the way you hold yourself, the air about you, everything about you has to say, don't bother me. You know, don't try. Don't touch me.
Right,
you know,
right.
It won't work for you if you get in my space, you know. And so I think that unconsciously I was putting all these things together. And I was, you know, always experimenting with different ways to make images. So I was combining collagraphs, which is making a collage that you print. You coat it with polymer to seal it so you can print it. I was combining that with monoprint, making collage, actually attaching some papers at the same time. But I think the combinations of everything I was seeing visually and the idea of that, how you need to protect yourself and interested in world cultures and just putting it all together into these sort of more playful images.
Yeah. I saw a lot that seemed Native American feeling as well.
There, yes.
Almost like the ancestors.
Right. Well, yeah. I've always been attracted to the Native American culture, too. I ended up using that later on in the Artist in Residence series when I was an artist in resident in Narrowsburg on the Delaware River, which is one of the reasons why I'm so interested in hydrofracking, too, because that's a big battleground.
Oh, yeah.
But I used a lot of Native American imagery there also.
These are beautiful series. I absolutely was impressed by those. Well, what kind of ceramics do you do? I haven't seen so much of that.
I'd learned ceramics in college at East Carolina, but I didn't do it again until later on when I lived in New York City. I did work at a private school in Englewood, New Jersey, and I did some ceramics there. But then when I went back to school and got my master's in education and began teaching, and when you're an art teacher, you have to know everything.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to.
You have to know everything. So, you know, I had to teach ceramics, and I loved ceramics. I didn't want to not teach it. So I taught myself more about it. And the ceramics that I ended up doing that I am selling are candle holders that hold like a 4-inch candle. And they're made with a slab technique where you roll out the slab. And I started carving away shapes,
of course.
And creating words in the slab and then building it so that the word and the phrase goes around the wall of the candle holder. And they're only about 3 or 4 inches high, and they hold a 4-inch candle. And they say things like, create your life, do good, be good.
So inspirational stuff for people.
Live to hope. Uh-huh. Inspirational slogans or that I sort of came up by. I mean, some of them are just common, you know, things. Count your blessings is one of them, and that's just a common phrase. So they're little candle holders, and I make them to sell. I haven't made them recently because I haven't got a kiln right now to fire them in. But
Do you do sculptures of people? Or
I did pots in the sense of coil pots or throne pots. And then my slab work, making the candle holders and any slab work I did that was sculptural, I haven't actually sold anything like that. But I became interested in the slab technique and the coil technique specifically.
Mm-hmm. And those were the two. So you take a slab of clay and you build a face inside the slab or some.
Oh no! You roll it out and then you build with it. Make containers, basically container oriented. Everything was sort of container oriented.
That's interesting, huh? Now you also have on your website something called paper art that you have examples of. What's the difference between that and the prints?
Well, I actually went to the Women's Studio Workshop in Rosendale, New York, for a while and made handmade paper, which is where, you know, you make the pulp, you know, and then you make. Of course, you know, I've made a lot of things that look like monoprints almost because they're shape-oriented again.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so I spent a long time there, I did more than one session there, making handmade paper where you actually use the paper pulp to create a design, create images.
It's beautiful stuff, Barbara.
And then
it
was so much fun. It's so much fun. And then also I collage a lot. I love collage. So that's in the paper category because I'm taking paper and making collage on paper. You know, political.
How do you display some of these? Do you have to make sure that they are not damaged? Are they delicate?
The handmade paper is more delicate, but it's framed with a mat around it. You know, just like everything.
The mat
doesn't come to the edge of the paper. You have a space between the actual image and the mat so that there's space. You know, just like the edge of the print ends and the mat begins like an inch after it. They're just framed like two-dimensional work. This frame.
It's akin to some of your printing. Do you decide I want to create this moment or this subject on paper rather than as a print?
I wanted to learn the handmade paper process when I was at the Women's Studio Workshop. And I was living only half an hour or less, 20 minutes away from there, and I wanted to learn that process, so I went there a couple different times, and they are known for their papermaking workshops. You know, that's what they also do, bookmaking. And they have a printmaking studio also. But I was so interested in the papermaking that I just concentrate on that. Like I wanted to just really learn it well. So I concentrated just at that time on that. I didn't do printmaking at that point.
God, so it's amazing how you want to learn things and you are determined and you go do it.
I am.
It's really a sign of continuously.
I just feel like if there's something I don't know, I have to learn how to do it.
Yeah, and your mind is constantly wanting stimulation, it sounds like. Before we do run out of time, I want to talk about your teaching, because you do teach. To tell us about how you go about it. How do you inspire? What are you looking for?
Well, right now, actually, I am looking for teaching on the college level. And I started teaching at the printmaking workshop in New York City, and that started in a very unique way, too. I went into the workshop one day to work, and I saw these children's prints that were lying around that were beautiful. And I said to this woman who was laying them out, what are those? And she said, oh, this is our program that we have. The printmaking workshop has a program. We get funded by the Cultural Council to, you know, do this. So I said, I want to do that. I want to teach the kids to do that.
Uh-huh.
And so she hired me as a teacher in the printmaking workshop, and it was a natural thing. She came up to me one day. She said, you're a great teacher. It just was a natural thing. So then I got a job teaching in Englewood, New Jersey at a private school there. And then this was all without a teaching degree. Then
After we moved to
Narrowsburg on the Delaware River, I decided that I wanted to affect the education there. So for 5 years I was funded as an artist in residence to design art programming to be put into the regular classroom and into the art classroom. And I taught with the art teacher and alongside the regular classroom teacher. I taught next to them in putting this material in there. So then I decided I had to go back to college and get my education degree.
So that's what I did.
And then I started teaching in public school in Canandaigua, and in Newark I also taught middle school and high school.
I think kids' art is so great. Aren't those minds just so amazing to work with?
It's wonderful. And you know the best thing about teaching? It's the best way to learn. You know, you have to always be learning to teach.
Yeah.
And I have to be learning because I love it. So
yeah.
I
and
love
you have to learn new ways to communicate.
You have to learn new ways to communicate. Too. You have to learn. There's no ending to what you have to learn.
Yeah.
And I always say, once you've been a public school teacher, you can really do anything.
Well, Barbara McPhail, we are almost out of time. Can you tell us your contact information? And if anything else coming up that we could see your work, any exhibits?
Well, I am trying right now. I have work. I have put it out there, and I'm waiting for responses, you know, to have my work shown right now. I'm waiting to get people to get back to me. So there's nothing right now. Some work just came down from a Rochester exhibit, but nothing's going up right away.
Okay.
But I'm www.barbaramcphail.com. And if you'd like to contact me, B. McPhail, McPhail, that's how you spell my name, bmcphail.art@gmail.com.
That's great.
And I also have a blog on the Tumblr blog website. It's called The Speaking Image.
Well, Barbara McPhail, thank you so much for joining us. This has been great. I hope somebody will pick up your work.
Oh, thank you very much.
People really
need
to
see this. It's been my pleasure
to be here. It's gorgeous stuff. Barbara McPhail, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.